Welcome back to this week's Techonomics. I'm Jason Middleton, and we're up to segment three, a resurgent segment about the bounce back of video game arcades. A husband and wife entrepreneur team operate two video game arcades in the Bay Area after having proven the business model back east in New Jersey before moving to the left coast. High Scores Arcades specializes in throwback games. One-time coin-operated games have been retrofitted for a newer, younger audience. Gamers pay by the hour at these arcades, and that helps sampling, and that's good for business and exposure. Here's our chat with half of the Livernoche family and High Scores Arcade ownership.
I'm the co-owner of High Scores Arcade with my wife, Megan Livernoche, and I'm Sean Livernoche.
Very cool. And I understand from the bio on your highscoresarcade.com page that you guys migrated west from New Jersey. But I want to go back a little bit farther than that. I want to know what the origin of Sean is when it comes to video games. What was the first game controller you held as a kid that kind of led you to be an entrepreneur and a small business owner of an arcade?
My first gaming experiences started in the arcades. You know, Ground Round is like a chain of restaurants that was around, you know, the East Coast when I was growing up, kind of like a casual dining place. They always had arcade games. And we're talking like real early 80s, like 82. You know, I was born in 77, so I'm a little bit younger than some of the, you know, the well-known, you know, game enthusiasts that are now in their mid-40s or 50s. But yeah, I grew up playing in the arcades. My first system was an Atari 2600, like many people my age. And, you know, there was a love affair with games at that time, and, you know, it just kind of continued during different eras.
I have a 7.5-year-old daughter, and we were in your Alameda shop recently, and I was amazed at the inventory you have in there. Now, those didn't all come from your basement, I can't assume. You and Meg didn't necessarily haul all that from New Jersey. How did you get that inventory and all those games in there?
That's kind of a trade secret, man. We've got to be like Willy Wonka. You know, we don't want you to let you know where we're getting all the everlasting gobstoppers, if you know what I mean. But the truth is that, you know, we started out as collectors. And actually, the inventory in our Alameda store, you know, which you've seen, is only represents half of the games that we've got available for play to the public in, you know, the Bay Area, you know, because you got to include our other store, which has as many titles and many that are not there in Alameda. And then on top of that, you got the ones that we've got in storage that we rotate in. So there's a lot more where that came from. And, you know, they didn't all come from our basement, but they started in New Jersey with one machine in the early, you know, mid-2000s, you know, and then two, then three, then four. And then before you know it, we had 14 of them sitting in our one-bedroom apartment in New Jersey. We opened up our arcade in Burlington City, New Jersey, which was open 2010. And by the time we moved out to California, we brought just about 50 of them with us across the country. And so since then, we've steadily been collecting and, you know, basically getting them from any source we can find them. And, you know, it's not always easy. So you got to go way beyond Craigslist and eBay. There's a community of collectors, and it helps being an established arcade brand because, you know, nowadays people reach out to us when they're trying to get rid of a machine in some cases or donate a machine, which is fantastic. And our motto is we don't sell them. You know, you'll never catch us selling a game. We get them, we restore them, or, you know, with help or on our own, and then we put them out for play in the public. And when they're not on either of the gaming floors, the games, you know, they stay with us in a storage facility.
So it sounds like I need to check out the Hayward, California location as well to scratch this itch, if you will. And I was playing a lot of Punch-Out when I was at the Alameda store. Now, 15 minutes before you open your store to the public every day, what game has got your attention right now?
What's great about this is it's like going back to an old friend or deconstructing an Emily Dickinson poem or something, because these things are so classic and so special and so unique that I find myself re-engaging and getting, you know, re-enthralled for a seventh and eighth and ninth time in different titles. So, you know, I've been recently bumping up my score in Centipede, you know, playing Tron a whole lot more. Some of these games I'll walk away from them. Like, for example, I haven't played Centipede in 5 years, even though we've had it on both arcade floors. But now I'm going, you know, re-engaged and re-excited about it. And I find myself going through cycles a lot. It shows me on a personal level that as a gamer, these things are really hard to put down and keep down. You know, you always want to go back to them.
Right. And I have to give you props for being able to weave Emily Dickinson into a video game review. I appreciate that. That took some skill.
Well, you know, it's not War and Peace, man. You know, it's like you see these new games that come out, and it takes 100 hours to play them and get a full completion. And And, you know, I just think it's a whole different animal, a whole different form of entertainment, even though it shares the label video game. These games are to be deconstructed and appreciated, and it's a slow burn. You know, you can always go back to Donkey Kong and find these little things, these little tricks, these little maneuvers that has the, you know, that's inside the programming that you didn't see before. Just like going back to a poem and looking it over and breaking it down. It's short, it's simple, but there's a whole lot there, where a lot of these other games are very expansive but also empty.
Well, I appreciate that approach to that, because you're going to be part of the show that we have Nolan Bushnell on. You mentioned earlier the Atari 2600. I had one as well as a kid. You had one. He's really proud of his legacy with Atari, and he said that it's about story when it comes to those games, and it doesn't have to be an overly complex story. It sounds like you've kind of taken that to heart with a lot of your approach to what you're showcasing at your two arcades, at least here in California.
And here's the thing that's great about the game that Nolan produced and that other companies like Nintendo and even Sega and, you know, Cinematronics and all these classic game companies were producing in the late 70s and early 80s. I mean, there's something very, very, very real and very, very tangible that's missing from current games, even the ones that try to go back and have a retro look or a retro feel. Technology was so limited that they could only give you part of the story. You know, so in other words, if you're playing Donkey Kong Jr., it's set in a jungle. The images are so rudimentary and abstract that in order to make Donkey Kong Jr. a jungle, it requires your imagination. You know, you have to meet it halfway. So you're actually, that experience is unfolding for you based on your references and your own experiences of what a jungle is, for example, and you're meeting the game halfway just for the experience to exist. Now, you play a game, a modern game like Uncharted 4, which also has a lot of places that take place in a jungle, but your imagination is not required anymore. You know, the programmers have got it all figured out. They've mapped out all the images. They've created music, professional voice acting, and you know, everything's kind of being, you know, you're being washed over by all this experience, where, you know, a lot of times with these older games, they could only really represent a part of what they wanted to communicate to you, and it's up to you to have the imagination to bring to the table. So it makes it a much more intimate experience, a much more personal experience, and a richer experience, in my opinion. And that's not to say I don't love modern games, but I just love them in a different way. They take a lot less out of me when I play them. They demand a lot less from me.
As far as where you are on the ground, what kind of audience are you seeing coming into your stores? Are you exposing a younger audience to some of the older games?
Yeah, it's unbelievable to me because it actually went against the grain of everything that I suspected. When we first started in the arcade business and, you know, we transcended from being collectors into curators, I was under the impression that the largest segment of the population that was going to come and enjoy what we had to offer were going to be men, mostly between like 30 and 55, you know, those that had either grown up with Robotron or something from the 80s, you know, like, you know, yeah. Like Centipede or like Donkey Kong. Maybe some guys that were a little bit younger that might have grown up with the Street Fighter series that wanted to play, but basically people that had experienced the arcade in its heyday or sometime after, you know, so either kids that had grown up and they were in the arcades in the early 80s or kids that are now in their 30s that had grown up, you know, at the time Street Fighter II or Third Strike was popular. But against what I believed, you know, the interesting thing is the bulk majority of our customers are actually teenagers and children. So, you know, we have a really healthy mix, you know, where there's a lot of different groups of people coming in, but it's comprised a lot of kids because they come in and they're interested in playing the games that are most familiar to them, the ones where the characters still exist in modern games like Mario. But that kind of hooks them. And then because of our business model where you pay wristband admission and you have free rein to play anything you want to in the building, you know, they'll try some of the other games they wouldn't ordinarily put a quarter into or give any time just because they've got all the time in the world. And what happens is they get hooked and they tend to appreciate the games in the same way that we did, which is shocking to me because they're currently, you know, just entrenched in technology that's just light years ahead of what we have to offer. But I believe the fun factor, the gameplay, and the attraction is still there for these older games, and they're established classics. You know, they'll never stop attracting children.
Well, Sean, you kind of veered into my last real question, which was your business model, which is, of course, pay by the hour and play a bunch of games, which is what my daughter and I have done for a couple of weekends in a row. So I'm glad you answered that. Now, I have like a non-real last question because we're running short on time. I kind of miss Pitfall. Do you have Pitfall at any of your stores?
Well, keep in mind, Pitfall was not an arcade game. It was an Activision game, and it was created by the team that actually veered away from Atari. Atari's business practices wasn't affording them to really make the kind of money or get the kind of recognition that they felt they deserved working under Atari. They were treated more, you know, in the way they tell it, the Activision team, They were treated more like factory workers, people that could have been replaced. One president said, I forget who it was, and I know it wasn't Nolan, that they might as well be the people putting the cartridges together on the assembly line. So they created Pitfall as one of their first standout hits by Activision as an Atari 2600 cartridge. But quickly, to answer your question, we're currently in the process of actually taking a lot of those console games, like Atari 2600 games, like TurboGrafx-16 games, like Atari Lynx games, like you might remember the portable, and creating full-size consoles out of those. It takes time, it takes a lot of care, but we want you to be able to play Pitfall in arcade, even if it wasn't ever intended to.
Thanks a lot for your time today, and best of luck.
Anytime, man. Thanks for your time.
That was Sean Livernoce. He and his wife, Meg, own and operate two High Scores arcade locations, one in Alameda and one in Hayward. We thought High Scores was a fitting continuation of our chat with Atari's founder, Nolan Bushnell. And if the Livernoces can bring Pitfall into a stand-up video game experience, well, we're all in.
Pitfall is a graphically stunning game that is taking the VCS jungle by storm.
We have links to this and all of our segments at kgoradio.com/Techonomics. We also have links to video games related stuff and our weekly musical playlist at facebook.com/Techonomics Radio. Coming up after the break, we pivot to the economy, specifically to the oil market and the recent OPEC deal. Will oil producers rattle markets enough that there's a price spike at the gas pump? More on that is next. This is Techonomics. I'm Jason Middleton. Please come on back.